back in under in oh, 6-8 months ago, I was going to teach about 10 lessons on the church, maybe 8, 6 or 8, 10, and then I was going to start a series of lessons on justice. So I didn't have to study for this tonight, because I studied for it 6-8 months ago, and had it all ready to go. And so I just kept on adding lessons on the church and adding lessons on the church. And you were so dumb you didn't get it, so I had to repeat it over and over and over again. And so I finally ended it last Wednesday night, and so I decided to go ahead and follow the plans I had or made 6 or 8 months ago and teach just a few lessons. I'm not going to teach for 6 months on justice. I'm not. I don't know that much about justice. It's only fair to say I didn't know that much about the church either, but I stretched it out. You can always add a little water to the soup and make it go a little farther. Open your Bibles, please, to a very interesting passage in Isaiah chapter 59. Isaiah chapter 59. I'm going to teach tonight on the subject, justice between people. Justice between people. Verse 14 of the 59th chapter of Isaiah. And judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth afar off. For truth is fallen as free, and equity cannot enter. Boy, that's a hunk of scripture. I'd like to teach just about 2 hours on that one verse. It says, judgment is turned away. can't judge properly, it says. And justice standeth afar off. Justice is not being done. And truth, why is that? Because truth is fallen in the street. In other words, because we don't know the truth about a matter, and we make a decision on that without knowing the truth about a matter, that causes judgment to be turned away backward and justice to stand afar off. Why? Because truth is fallen and is not standing. Verse 15, yea, truth faileth, and he that departeth from evil maketh himself a prey. And the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. I want to say this and then pray, and then we'll have our special, and then I'll teach. But there's no way that anybody can execute justice without knowing the truth. You've got to know the truth. So I want you to listen carefully tonight. Now look, you boys and girls, don't you go home and tell your mama and daddy they've not been just, because they may be more unjust even then than they have been. And don't you go home and tell them Brother Howell said they're unjust. But I am, and by the way, I'm giving all the parents here tonight permission to be very unjust if their children hold this Bible study before them. But I do want to talk to parents. There are injustices done between parents and children. There are injustices done between teachers and pupils. There are injustices done between administrators and employees. And those injustices almost always evolve around the fact that we don't know the truth before we decide to execute a sentence. So don't leave me tonight, and for the next few weeks, I really believe I can give you something that will help you to be a better mother, a better father, a better boss, a better teacher, a better principal, a better executive, a better administrator. So I hope you will, a better parent. Father, bless us tonight. Thank you for this truth. I pray you'd help us as we study it together. Please help us to love justice. Help truth to stand up straight so justice can come near and judgment can be right. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, Father, I want to be fair as I teach fairness. I want to be right, teach rightness. I want to be just as I teach justice. And I pray, Holy Spirit, you'll help me as I teach and help our people as they listen. In Jesus' name, Amen. I promise you this. I promise you that if you will heed and practice what is taught from this pulpit in the next few weeks, I promise you it'll transform your home. I promise you it'll transform your personal relationships with people. I promise you it'll help you to be in a better mood. I promise you. I'm going to talk about justice. Now, I'm going to talk tonight about me, the way I practice justice. And so I'm not going to be bawling you out for not practicing it, though you really haven't been treating me real well lately. But I'm not going to mention that. I'm not going to mention how unjust you are to me. I don't want to do it. I'm like so many people say to me, Brother House, I'm for you in spite of the fact the whole world is against you. And I want you to know how I feel. But anyway, all of us have to judge. Everybody in this room who's an adult has to judge. Now, you parents, you've got your judges. Let's face it, you're judges. And you teachers, you have to judge in the classroom. I have to judge as pastor of the church and as an administrator in the schools. Dr. Evans has to judge, and Dr. Jorgensen has to judge at the college. And they that teach at the college have to judge. And all of us who are grown, we are judges, like it or not. Now, I must judge many times a week. Could I ask you to understand for a minute my plight? I have to judge many times a week with thousands of judges judging my judging. You think you got it rough? I mean, I probably have to, I'd say at least 100 times a week, I have to make some judgment about somebody that affects them. And now you can imagine, with thousands of people investigating my judgment, you can imagine how many people get upset with me over a period of a week or a month's time because I do not judge as they think I should judge. Now, I want to show you tonight the process and processes by which I judge. Now, I want to make a general statement before I start. The statement is this, and it's not the first point, the first statement. I only judge when I have jurisdiction over somebody. Let me say it again. I only judge when I have jurisdiction over somebody. I do not try to figure out what the sentence should be, what the crime is, or what the judgment should be about somebody else's area. I've got too many things I've got to be concerned about over which I have jurisdiction. So I never allow myself to draw an opinion about a judgment case unless I have jurisdiction. You follow what I'm trying to say? In other words, I am pastor of First Baptist Church. I'm over the staff here, and so if there's a judgment between two staff members, I have to judge because I have jurisdiction there. I am chancellor of the college and superintendent of the schools, and so there are times when I have to make judgment. But if I do, and listen, this one thing will change your life. If you will just not bother to figure out what you would do if you were judging in somebody else's jurisdiction, it'll transform your life. It'll put you in a better humor, in a better spirit. You know, sometimes I wish that teachers could go to the homes and tell the parents how awful the decisions are that they're making in the homes. You see what I'm trying to say? I'm saying the teacher at the school has to judge. You say, well, sometimes they don't judge right. Well, sometimes, sweetheart, you don't judge right either. And so I'm simply saying that I do not allow myself to try to figure what the sentence should be if it's an area where I have no jurisdiction. What a tremendous thing. If the whole world would have heard me say that and do what I just said, you'd be amazed what it'd do to this whole world. Well, they call that keeping your nose out of somebody else's business. And I really am trying to be scholarly, but I can't be because I have to put it down on your level. But, all right. Now, what is judgment? Now, let's look at me. I want you to get this in your mind. You won't have to write this down because you'll remember it. What is judgment? Judgment is is three things. Number one, the right assessment of the guilt. The right assessment of the guilt. If you're going to be just, you've got to know what he did. What did he do? You cannot judge somebody justly on what you think he did, or what you wish he did, or what you heard he did. In order for it to be just, it's got to be on what you know that he did. So, the right assessment of the guilt, or what did he do? Now, secondly, in order for justice to be meted out, it must be the right sentencing of the guilt, of the guilty. The right sentencing of the guilty. In other words, the punishment must be commensurate with what was done. Now, follow me carefully. The first thing is, we have to have the right assessment of the guilt. We must know what he did. And nobody should ever punish anybody unless he knows what he did. All right? Now, the second thing is the right sentencing of the guilt. And I'm going to go back and this is the outline tonight. I'm going to go back and take each one of these and spend some time on them in a minute. All right? Then number three, the right treatment after the sentence is over. Or the right treatment after the punishment's over. Now, that's what justice is. When you assess properly the guilt, what did he do? And then when you sentence properly for the guilt, and then when you treat the guilty properly after the sentence. Now, let's look at them one at a time. Number one, the right assessment of the guilt. Now, that means no judge, and when I say judge now, I'm talking about a judge in the courtroom. I'm talking about you. When you have a judgment case to make in your family, in your class, in any area where you have jurisdiction, first thing, you must know the crime. Now, nobody's just who punishes and doesn't know the crime. You've got to know, K-N-O-W. You've got to know the crime. And that means, what did you do? Now, let's say this now. You can't be just, hear me now, you can't be just and punish on what it looks like he did. You can't be just and punish on what I think he did. You can't be just and punish on what he was accused of doing. You can't be just and punish properly, justly, only except what you know he did. Now I'm going to use illustration. This is a real illustration, Doc. If I'm wrong on this, be quiet. But there came to our committee, Dr. Jorgensen, Dr. Evans, and I, committee. And by the way, I rarely ever make a unilateral or a judgment call myself. Rarely ever do. I vote what I think is right and just, but I rarely ever make by myself a judgment call. All right, we had a case. It's nighttime at the college. Now, all of the classrooms are supposed to be locked, right? All right. But a classroom was not locked. I tell Dr. Evans to get those keys and lock all those classrooms, but sometimes he forgets to do his job. He gets busy sweeping and mopping, and he doesn't have time for the other stuff. But one classroom was not locked. So it's nighttime, two people went in that dark classroom and did not turn the lights on. I'll give you two guesses. That's what gender they were. One of each. And it's very, very interesting. In a dark room like that, I started to say it almost always is one of each, but in these days, anyway. All right, now follow me carefully. I want you to tell me what justice is here. So this couple was caught in this dark room that was supposed to have been locked, that we didn't lock. Dr. Evans didn't lock. We did not lock the door, and they were caught in there. Now, they weren't caught doing anything except being in there. All right? Now then, what did we know? Well, we thought a few things, didn't we? I didn't. I'm not the suspicious type. But Dr. Jorgensen, I guarantee you, he is. I'm not even sure. If you get punished by the three of us, it's not Evans and Howell. It's Jorgensen. He's always the one that does it. But anyway, now we call him out. There's no lipstick on his face, and we say, "What were you doing in there?" Did they say they were praying? They were praying? All right, that's Jorgen said. They said they were praying. Let me ask you a question. How many of you folks are over 25 and married? If you had been single, back out of when you were single, if you'd been in a dark room that was unlocked by yourself, how many of you would have prayed? I think the praying started when Dr. Jorgensen opened the door. So they told the truth. They were praying. Years ago, the story is told, Dr. Evans may know whether it's true or not, the story is told, Dr. Bob Jones Sr. Went down to the a huge, used to anyway, a dating parlor. I'm in a room about nearly a third the size of this lower floor, nothing but sofas in there, and the couple sit there, and they have their dates, and they have people watching, of course, you know, like two adults for each couple and watching them. And so Hal Anderson takes more than that, but Dr. Bob Jr., Bob Sr., the old Dr. Bob, it is said, turned the lights out in the dating parlor. And then he turned the lights back on. This is what he said. Is this story true? It's a legend. And which means I'm lying, right? But this is said, that Dr. Bob Sr. then turned the lights back on and said, okay, come on. How many of you fellows kissed your girlfriend while the lights were out? Come on.
A few sheepish, they raised their hand like that.
Dr. Bob said, what's wrong with the rest of you fellas? But, now wait a minute. Here's a couple in a dark room, and we did not find them doing anything wrong. No sign they're doing anything wrong. Now what do we know? Okay, I'm asking, what do we think? You know what we think. Now, you know why you think that? See, you usually think people did, at a certain situation, what you would have done in the same situation. You see? But, now, okay, what does it look like they did? It looks like they misbehaved, right? Huh? All right. Now, can we judge, maybe just and judge on what it looks like? Now, if we have a rule on what it looks like, we can judge on looking like something, but not on what it looks like. You follow me? You don't follow me. All right, let me say it again. If there's a rule that says if you look like that you've been doing what it looks like, if you look like you've been doing something that's against the rule, then that also is against the rule. But you can't punish the person for what you think he did. You have to punish him for committing the appearance of evil. But you can't give him the punishment for committing the evil. All right? Let me ask you a question then. We could not judge them on what we think they did. That's not justice. We cannot judge them on what they're accused of doing. That's not justice. Let me stop and say this. Far too many times, we assume something is true because somebody told us. I know teachers. It's so easy for teachers to hear another teacher says something about a student and assume it's true. Now, I'm not saying the teacher's a liar. I am saying that sometimes people don't see things the same way. So we bring a student in and bawl him out before he has a chance. Now, to even say what went on. And that's not justice. Justice, we cannot assume someone guilty of something because somebody told us that. We had a man who came to several years ago. The Lively was here, junior high. He's a good man, by the way. I mean, he may be here tonight, and he's one of the best men we have. And I certainly would not want to be unkind. You'll never know who it is, but. But the initials are Moffitt. But No, this man was not on the staff, but a good man, fine man. And he's here tonight. Don't be offended. Nobody's ever going to know who it is. But he came in, and he said, my children have been mistreated at the junior high school. And I said, how do you know they've been mistreated at the junior high school? He said, because they say they've been mistreated at the junior high school. And they say that the teacher, the principal, have done thus and so. And I said, well, how do you know that the principal and teacher have done thus and so? He said, because my children said so. I said, I gather your children never make a mistake. He said, my children always tell the truth. And I said, then would you like to know what they've told Mr. Lively and me about you and your wife? Well, he said, never mind. You understand what you didn't get that, did you? It's better than your response was. Now, listen to me. People can say things, and sometimes they're lying, and sometimes they see something in a certain way that's not exactly the way it happened. So I'm saying, I do not. Now, you judge any way you want to. If you want to grab a kid up and shake him good and hard because somebody said so and so, that's up to you. Or if you want to judge what somebody's done because of rumor and gossip, that's up to you. But I don't do that. I must make the right assessment of the gift. All right? Not what it looks like this couple did in the dark room. Not what I think they did in the dark room. Not what they were accused of doing in the dark room. But only what I know they did. Now, okay, let me ask you a question. What do I know that they did? Talk to me out loud. What do I know they did? They were in a dark room together. Is that right? That's all I know. Now, I've got to punish them on the basis of what I know. I can't say, yeah, I know what you did in there. No, I don't know what they did in there either. They may have been praying. But I don't know. Now, I am not going to punish them for anything. Listen now, I'm not going to punish them for anything. My vote is not to punish them for anything other than what I know they did. I know they're in a dark room together, and that's against the rules. But now, wait a minute. We were a part of that crime because Dr. Evans didn't lock the door. Now, in this case, I voted to punish them just for being in a dark room together. Dr. Evans, Dr. Jorgen voted to punish them for what we heard. They thought we did. No, that. Are you with me tonight? I must start telling you when I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We all voted to punish him for what we thought they did. But no, we didn't. Now, look, you know what I wanted to do? Throw the book at him. I wanted to punish him for immorality. I wanted to punish them for indiscretion. But I did not know there was indiscretion. And justice says, I must first assess properly the guilt. Number two, not only must I assess the guilt, I must also have the right sentencing of the guilty. I must be sure that the punishment is equal to the crime committed. You see, you've seen symbols of justice, and there's a scale there. A scale is a symbol of justice. Here's a scale right here. Somebody commits a crime or an infraction, and so there it is. It's unbalanced. Now, if they're not punished for that, that's not justice. When your mother say, "You do that one more time, and I'm going to spank you." Then if they do that one more time and you don't spank them, you know what you are? A prevaricator. I mean, but that's not justice, you see. In the first place, you shouldn't have said that. But in the second place, if you said it, you're supposed to do it. Because it's not honest, okay? So here are the scales. A person breaks a law and there's no justice. Now, the justice is when the punishment balances out the scale, exactly. Too much punishment, that's not justice. No punishment, that's not justice. You must find exactly what they did and then punish them commensurate to the crime that they committed. Let me say three or four things here under that. One, punishment should be predetermined. Now, this is going to change your life if you let it. Punishment should be predetermined. I do not like judgment calls. I was asked tonight to make a judgment call, and I do not like to make judgment calls. I think that punishment should be predetermined. In the Old Testament, for example, you know, not only in the Old Testament are the things that are wrong mentioned, but what you're supposed to do with people that do the wrong is mentioned. When our kids were growing up, I had a list of everything, take Cindy for example, I had a list of everything wrong that I thought Cindy could do. 74,313 things on that list. And beside that list, I had the punishment for that wrong. So, when Cindy did something wrong, she knew beforehand what was the punishment was going to be. Justice cannot stand too many judgment calls. Justice can't stand. See, sometimes you feel good, and sometimes you feel bad. And you will not execute the same sentence for the same crime all the time. So you must, to be just, you should have the sentence listed for the crime. The Old Testament does that. At our schools years ago, I got tired of the principal and the pastor, the principals and the pastor taking the brunt of all the decisions. Somebody would come in, they'd done something wrong, the principal would say, okay, this is the punishment. Or maybe he'd come to me and we'd say, this is the punishment. And folks would come to us and say, that's not fair, that's not right, that's not, you're not being just there. So what I did, I wrote down every infraction that I could think of that's committed at Hammond Baptist Schools. I took it to our deacon board one Saturday night, and we spent about 3 hours taking each infraction and applying beside that infraction what the punishment would be if and when the child broke the rule. So, if, for example, if somebody in Hammond Baptist High School steals, they all get the same punishment. It may be if we're in a good mood, we might say, oh, well, the child has a good record otherwise. Or if we're stick it to him, Buster. We don't do that. We have every infraction listed. And beside that way, you can't blame Dr. Evans. You can't blame Dr. Weber. You can't blame Dr. Sisson. You can't blame Mr. Vogel. You can't blame him because the board has already decided what the punishment is. So we do not decide the punishment. Let the law decide the punishment. And that's what the entire American law system ought to be about. The fine for going 45 miles an hour and 35 miles on is thus and so. And if you go that far fast, you ought to pay thus and so. And every crime, every law in America has the infraction mentioned and the penalty for that infraction. All right? That's what God means in Romans 6:23, for the wages of sin is death. God said, this is what you pay. This is the price for it. You go check the book of Leviticus, look at the Deuteronomy. You check the laws that the Old Testament, God gave the Old Testament people of Israel. And he'll say, okay, you do this, and this is what, you do this to somebody that does this. Now, to be just, you need to have the right sentencing of the guilty, and under that, punishment should be predetermined. Number two, the knowledge of the rule should be considered. Listen carefully. Does the pupil know the rule? Does the child know the rule? Does the class member know the rule? Does the employee know the rule and its consequences? That's why we give out the handbook. We give out the handbook. The handbook says you do this, and you pay for it this way. Now, it just may be that we have been delinquent in getting the rule, the knowledge of that rule out. That's why it says in the Bible, it'll be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for Tyre and Sidon. Why? Because Sodom and Gomorrah didn't have the Old Testament. They didn't have the law. They didn't have Jesus. But Tyre and Sidon had Jesus. They knew more. So the knowledge of the law is important in order for us to decide what kind of sentence should be meted out. That's why I said the times of ignorance God winked at. People often ask me, Brother Howell, why was it okay for folks to have several wives in the Old Testament and now just one wife? It wasn't okay then. But it's worse now. Because the Old Testament didn't have 1 Corinthians chapter 7. They didn't have Romans chapter 7. They didn't have Matthew chapter 7. And they did not have the instruction about polygamy that we have. They didn't have Paul's epistles to Timothy and to Titus. Didn't have that. Now we have it. Now listen to me. Let's make whatever your jurisdiction is, you make plain to those under you what the rules are. This is wrong. This is the punishment. That's what you call justice. Now then, under that again, consider a precedent. Precedent. So what's the precedent? He's the guy that's in charge of the United States. Consider, so I'm saying, when you have a decision, make, call Mr. Bush. Okay, consider what you've done before under the same circumstances. How many times have you, Dr. Evans, and you, Dr. Jorgensen, and others, Brother Vogel, and Brother Weber, Brother Sisson, how many times have you, and Brother, you heard me say this again and again. Do we have any precedent here? What did we do before to somebody who did the same thing? You know what I'm trying to say? You've got to be fair and just. Now, okay, I don't like you, so I'll punish you more than I will him, because I like him. Now, the truth is, I'm being facetious. I don't like either one of you, really. But I'm saying that it is wrong for you to punish someone under you in a different way than you punish somebody else in the past that committed the same infraction. That's what you call justice, ladies. And listen, our homes are filled with injustice. Our classrooms are filled with injustice. All right? I said, number one, the right assessment of the guilt. What did he do? What do you know he did? I said, number two, the right sentencing of the guilty. Punishment predetermined, knowledge of the rule should be explained, and consider the precedent. Then, number three, the right treatment after the sentence. Okay, Brother John Colson, let's suppose you owed me some money. And I say, Brother John, when are you going to pay me that money? And he says, I'll get you the money. I said, Brother John, when will I get the money? And finally, after months and months, he gives me the money and pays my debt. Now, what am I supposed to do? I'm not supposed to send him any more bills. I'm not supposed to mention it. Why? The debt is paid. Now, punishment for a wrong deed basically is the payment of a just debt. I did this. The price on this is this. By the way, I think in the case of children, the price ought to be paid from the same place that they committed the crime. If a child takes the car and he's not supposed to take the car, then punish him 2 weeks without having the car. Look, a child may decide, one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. It was years ago when television was decent. I'm talking about 35 years ago. The Danny Thomas program had a program, and Danny Thomas was taken to a hillbilly judge for speeding. And he said, I didn't speed. And the judge said, but the officer says you did speed. And Danny Thomas said, I didn't speed. And boy, he told him off. And the judge said, that's $10 for contempt of court. He said, here's 20. I want to say it again. Now, he knew what the price was for contempt of court. He wants to buy $100 worth of contempt of court, he can. So if a child or a teenager... If a teenager takes the car, but he's not supposed to take the car, if he knows that's 2 weeks without the car, then he decides that it's worth it. It may be worth it for a kid to have a car the night he wants it and not have it for 2 weeks. But the 2 weeks without the car is the payment he makes. Now, when the payment is made, then no mention it anymore. No mention. Yes, I needed that. No mention it. Paid. Once the bill is paid, you don't send any more reminders. All right. Oh, this is good.
I said three things are necessary for justice. Number one, the right assessment of the guilt.
Now, you will never get me.
You will never get me to punish somebody for a crime that I don't know they committed.
Never will.
You'll never get me to punish somebody for breaking a rule that I don't know they broke.
I won't do it.
I will not use circumstantial evidence. I won't do it. There's no way that, listen, when these young people go to our schools, they're human beings. They have a right to be treated judicially and justly. And then I'll guarantee you that the guys will tell you, I said it over and over again, we've got to be just. We've got to be fair. We've got to be right. Now, you cannot be just. Hear me now. You cannot be just if you punish somebody for something you don't know that they did. If you heard they did it and punish them, that's not justice. If you think they did it and punish them, that's not justice. To be just, you've got to punish them for what you know that they did. They were in the dark room together. And they were punished for being in that dark room together. But they were not punished for what we thought that went on in the dark room or what somebody said went on in the dark room. They're punished because we knew they were in the dark room together. Number two, you've got to have the right assessment of the guilt, know the crime, what did you do, but you've got to have the right sentencing of the guilt, and that is punishment predetermined, knowledge of the rule, carefully explained, considering the precedent, what happened before, and number three, the right treatment after the sentence. Now look at me. Now we will not always agree on what is just. Dr. Evans, where's Brother Weber? Must be a ball game on tonight. Where's Brother Sisson? Okay. Thank you. You have to go. I just want to find where you are. If somebody breaks a rule in the grade school, is it up to you to try to figure out what he should do? No. And Brother Sisson, if somebody breaks a rule in the college, is it up to you to try to figure out what he should do? No. Because you have jurisdiction of the grade school and you have jurisdiction of the college. All right? But here's what's going to happen. We will not always agree on what is just. Let me go back to a sermon I preached here 6 months ago. I made a few statements. Number one, only one has perfect justice. That's God. All right? That means I don't have perfect justice, right? All right? That, and also, if only God has perfect justice, then no two people will always agree on what justice is. Is that right? Look, that's why we vote. I told Dr. Evans last week on matters, it seemed like the whole meeting we had last week, I got outvoted 2-1. I'm not trying to get out of anything. I'm just trying to tell you that I was for you. You can thank God you got one person on the committee that's on your side. I've seen meetings when Dr. Jorgensen was outvoted 2-1. I've seen meetings that seemed like Dr. Evans was always on the short end of the stick. Now, if we vote 2-1 on what justice is, that's what we do. But no two people always agree. Now, let me use an old illustration that I love to use. Back yonder about 22 years ago, 23, I wrote a book called The Howells Church Manual. Then I wrote a book called The Howells Sunday School Manual. Big thing. I was proud of it. I had to get a haircut, and I went down to the barber shop to get a haircut. I took the church manual, the Sunday School manual, because when you write a book, it's like having a baby. You labor to bring it into existence, and you want to show it off when you get it when it was born. It was not a real big book after all. It was a pamphlet. It was a gospel tract. I'm doing the best I can. Now then, I got to be careful what I say now. Next time, maybe lightning. Now, I was sitting in the barber chair out here on Ridge Road in Munster, reading the book that I had just gotten from the publisher, The Sword of the Lord, Dr. Rice published it. Well, I was reading it like this, so the barber could see Jack Hiles, author. Well, when I got to page, certain page, I'm just going to pick out a number, say page 121. The next page was page 142. But don't worry, I found pages 22. I think that was page 116. But, look, I don't need to be interrupted right now. But if lightning didn't strike in, you're safe. I'll be for sure. But don't worry. The fact that it went from page 121 to 142, don't worry. I found pages 22 through 41, 122 to 141, after page 305. Oh, dirty bric-a-brac, a pack of lumber, bunch of slattery up. I ran to the pay telephone, called Dr. Rice. He published the book. I said, Dr. Rice, you're going to be disappointed. I tell you what happened. He said, what? I said, that book that you published me, the Howard Sunday School Manual, 21 pages, lifted out over here from the front of the book and put back here at the back of the book. He didn't say anything. I said, Dr. Rice, what you going to do? He said, I'm going to print a little sticker. And inside the cover of each book, I'm going to have little instructions. Go from page 121 to page 306. I said, Dr. Rice, that's not fair. He said, yes, it is. Yes, it is. But now, wait a minute. We didn't agree on that. We didn't agree. Okay. I said, Dr. Rice, you ought to print those books over again. He said, Dr. Rice can't do that. He said, the thing to do, the fair thing to do is put that sticker in there. I said, Dr. Rice, that's not fair. Now, let's have a vote. How many of you narrow-minded people with distorted senses of justice? Now, vote your conviction. I want to say, how many of you think, honestly, it would have been just to put the little sticker inside the front of the book? Raise your hand, be honest. All right? How many think that how many of you intelligent, just people, how many of you think you should reprint the book? All right? Now, wait a minute. Do you think all these people that raised their hand that the sticker was okay are bad people? I do. No, they're not bad people. And the truth is, they're just as good as you folks that voted that he should have reprinted the book. Now, what does that show? That shows that good people can differ on justice. Is that right? Good people can differ on what kind of punishment should be given. All right. I said only one has perfect justice. No two people always agree. Then, third thing, and this most important thing I'm going to say, I must not require you to agree with me on what I think is just. If I do require you to agree with me, then I am God. I think my justice is right. Now, personally, I always think my justice is right. And we walk out of a meeting sometime, and I think that Sisson and Vogel and Weber are idiots. I'm trying to think of a meeting where I walked out and didn't think that. But there are times when I walk out, I know that. I can't see it. But those are good men. Those are sincere men. So I am not going to require them to execute sentence against the broken law, broken rule, as I would see it. Why? Only God is perfect. Has perfect justice. If I say, you ought to do this. Now, the truth is, I'm playing God. Because I'm saying I'm right. But in any given instance, I could be wrong. And I hate to tell you this, but so could you. That's one reason why you ought to limit your judging to your own area of jurisdiction. But if there is a time, when, as the committee meets, there is a time when you vote on something, or both of you have to share the decision. For example, I decided years ago that John Rice was an honest man. I decided, I know he's not always right because he's man. Only God has perfect justice. So John writes, he is going to be wrong sometimes on justice. But I am going to be wrong sometime on justice because I likewise am human. Consequently, I must not require Dr. Rice to reconcile his concept of justice in any case to what I think is justice. I must decide once and for all, is John Rice sincere? Is he trying to be a just man? With all my heart, I think it. I think all these men on the platform right here tonight, every one of them, I think they're all sincere men. Now, I think that in every case, all these men, well, with the exception of the Muppet, I think all these men are sincere men. Now then, does that mean that if they don't agree with me, that I must get upset about it? No. Why? Because he alone always executes perfect justice. So sometimes I'm going to be wrong. So I must always take account of the possibility in any case that this may be the case where I'm wrong. Now look, you're looking at the man that invented stubbornness. Stubbornness is spelled H-Y-L-E-S. First word, B-E-V-E-R-L-Y. I'm willing to admit that. I'm willing to do that. Stubbornness is spelled J-A-C-K-F-R-A-S-U-R-E-H-Y-L-E-S. I think I'm always right. But I must realize that though I always think I'm right, I'm not always right. So I must decide if you're sincere. Folks, why don't we decide not to try everybody every day with a new trial? That we ought to have a trial of somebody, okay? Bob O'Clair, I'm going to have a put you on trial. I've known you for 18 years. I think you're a good man. I think you're a sincere man. So I am going to believe that every time that you execute judgment, you are sincerely doing what you think you ought to do. Consequently, when he disagrees with me, I won't be upset with him. See? Why don't you decide once and for all whether or not Brother Hiles is sincere? Why don't you decide once and for all whether or not you believe your wife is sincere? Why don't you decide once and for all whether or not you believe your husband is sincere? The reason that you argue and fuss in your home is because you are playing God. She will not do it like you think it ought to be done. Or he will not do it like you think it ought to be done. And it doesn't agree with the way you would do it, so you have a fuss. But you can eliminate those fusses if you'll stop and realize that that gal is a sincere gal, and that guy is a sincere guy, and I believe he's sincere, and if we don't see eye to eye on what you've done, I'm not going to say I'm right or he's right. I'm not going to make him conform to what I think is justice. So that will allow you to disagree. So I will not put you on trial every day. There's one statement that's made in the Bible three times and almost made four times. In Romans 1:17, it says the just shall live by faith. In Galatians 3:11, it says the just shall live by faith. In Hebrews 10:38, it says the just shall live by faith. And in Habakkuk 2:4, it says the just shall live by his faith. Now, three times the same word, the just shall live by faith. The just shall live by faith. Now, in Romans 1:17, it says we live from faith to faith. From faith to faith. What does that mean? That means that I live by faith in Wendell Evans because I believe he's sincere. If he makes a mistake in judgment, I won't know it because I'm not going to judge his mistake on the basis whether it agrees with my judgment or not. I live by faith in Wendell Evans because nobody, no two people, are always going to agree, and no person has perfect justice. So if I have confidence in him, I'm going to believe that he tries to do that which is right. Now, folks, listen to me. This could change your life. I just can't see that. I understand that. You don't have to see it. Think the guy's an idiot in his judgment, but think he's sincere in making it. And realize that you may be the one wrong, or he may be the one wrong, because only God is always right in justice.
So?
I'll not put Bob Eau Claire back on trial. I will not decide every day or every week or every month or every year whether I think he's just or not. I know he's not always just because I know he's human. But I know he's always sincere. And I know that I'm always sincere. So if what I think should be given out to punish the crime is different from what he thinks should be given out to punish the crime, I'm not going to say he's wrong. I'm going to say to me, it looks like this. But I'm not going to rail at him and say, why don't you see it like that? Because then I become God. Only our God has perfect justice. And nobody else does. I was preaching in a certain city. I preached a sermon I mentioned a while ago that I preached about 6 months ago here. I went to a city about 100 miles from that city again. 15 couples chartered a bus and came to hear me preach a few weeks after I'd been to preach that sermon on justice. 15 couples chartered a bus and came to hear me preach in the other town 100 miles away, and they said, we've come to tell you something. In all 15 cases, our marriages have been salvaged because of the sermon that you preached and the four statements you made. Four statements you made saved our marriages. Statement number one, only one has perfect justice. Statement number two, no two of us will ever agree always on justice. Statement number three, decide if somebody is sincere. Statement number four, allow him to differ from you and still be sincere. Because you don't know who's right and who's wrong. Sometimes Bob Eau Claire, when he and I differ, he'll be right, I'll be wrong. Sometimes he'll be right, I'll be right, he'll be wrong. And this thing, this one doctrine could transform your life. It'll keep you from trying to run somebody else's business. It'll keep you in your own yard and not in somebody else's yard. It will let you allow, look, all of us are human, but we have to have somebody that's in charge. Somebody's got to be in charge of every organization. That's why I'm at Little Leagues. Some of you run out on the field. You're not treating my boy, son! He only played 6 innings, and the other kid, he's Eau Claire's son, he played 7 innings. What you're saying is, listen to God. Let God talk. Because I know how much my boy should have played. No, you don't. I have some bad news for you. You're human. Now, you may be right, and the coach may be wrong, or he may be right, and you may be wrong. But since you don't know who's right and who's wrong, let the guy have credit for being sincere. Kill the umpire! And that's exactly what you're saying in any circumstance where you get outside your field of jurisdiction or where you differ with somebody else's judgment of justice and become offended with them, whether it's your husband, your wife, your brother, your sister, your student, your teacher. Let me plead with all of you tonight for the sake of all the rest of us. Let me plead with you to always, before you punish, always have the right assessment of the guilt. What did you do? And to always have the right sentencing of the guilty consistent with past sentencing. And always treat with dignity the one who's been punished when the punishment is over. Only one has perfect justice. No two people will see justice always alike. I must not require you to agree with me on what I think justice is. I must decide if I think you're sincere, allow you to disagree, and not put you on trial every day. Shall we stand, please?